Hi, this is Manton Reese.
And this is Daniel Jalkut.
And this is Core Intuition. That's what the web is about. This episode is sponsored by Linode and Udacity.
Oh, Manton, I am a software shipping machine.
Right. That's good.
What I say to myself. That's what I say to myself when I'm not suffering under the weight of an insurmountable shame over lack of getting things done.
Well, it only takes one release to turn everything around, right?
It helps. You know, it really does help. Funny, because sometimes I think chatting with you, I just kind of get this. It's kind of like we've talked before about going to a conference and getting inspired to, you know, go home and do something. I have a terrible memory for what we've actually talked about, but I think last week we didn't specifically talk about like my plan to have a beta release of Black Ink. We might have talked about it, but anyway, I think I've mentioned it before that I've been working on crossword app, my Black Ink crossword app. I have all this work. I know we talked about the fact that I have all this work I put into it, and I don't want it to go to waste.
Right.
I made that mistake with Mars Edit 4, where I sat on, you know, we've also talked about this. I sat on some of the features in Mars Edit 4. You know, Manton, because you were among the few lucky people to get to use some of them like 5 years ago.
Right. Maybe not that, but at least a year ahead of time, you had a lot of that stuff done.
Well, and I mean, a lot of it I did have done, I guess, even earlier maybe than you saw it. But it's just one of those things that's painful when you have good work done. Nobody can see it because you haven't shipped a major update yet. It's horrible. This is why, in some ways, you know, things like web development are awesome because you can just keep putting stuff out there. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I don't know what happened last week, but I went on a wild beta release rampage, and Black Ink 2 is public beta.
Awesome.
It's out there.
Congratulations.
People can check it out.
I did check it out. I checked it out indeed. It looks like a good update. Lots of polish in the UI. And I mean, it's just like, it's the kind of update you do when it's been a long time since the last one.
Yes, right. I mean, it's one of these funny things where it's like I got the update out there, and then I was like, okay, I'm going to write about all the cool stuff that's new. And I was like, oh, what's new? Oh, well, kind of nothing and kind of everything. It's right. One of these things where it's like, yeah, some of the major updates people might want, not so much, but it got rid of the drawers.
Yeah, that is so funny.
It's kind of like, which will be the last of my apps to, which will be the last app that has a drawer?
I was going to say, what's the last app like in the app store or like ever that still runs? Like, who's the last person that hasn't updated their app to not have drawers?
So it could still be me, because although I updated my music interval training program, Clarion, to not use a drawer for the main. It has like a little piano keyboard that pops out the bottom. You know, previously it had a little piano keyboard that popped out the bottom and a drawer. Mm-hmm. And then like, I don't know, 2 or 3 years ago, I updated it to put that into the main window. But it still has the little like registration dialogue still comes out as a little drawer. So maybe I'll keep that in there. I don't know. This is funny. You know, we've had this discussion so many times before, the whole question of like when to kill apps. It's like Clarion is like, I don't know, it has a special dispensation for being like the first app that I sort of ever really released.
Yeah.
Apart from, you know, I had this other game called Super Robots, but Clarion has been now around for, I was looking at it the other day. It's been around for over 20 years.
What? Gosh. No wonder it still has multiple drawers.
I know. Well, you know, it's the only app that I currently sell with quotation marks around sell because nobody buys it. Mm-hmm. But it's the only app that is currently available for sale that has a history that goes back to Carbon, like all the way back.
Yeah.
Wow. And I wrote that app simultaneous with being a QA tester at Apple. I wrote it in my spare time at home as an exercise because I wanted to learn I wanted to practice my music intervals, and because I wanted to write something using the QuickTime APIs.
Mm-hmm. The music instruments and all that kind of stuff.
Music instruments and all that jazz. And nowadays, that's all in Core Audio. But back in the Mac OS, pre-Mac OS 10 days, that's the other thing. It's the only one of my apps that that has a heritage that goes back to before Mac OS 10.
That's cool. That's really cool.
Yeah. It's
so is it
cool.
written in Cocoa now, or is it still Carbon HI Toolbox and all that stuff?
Yeah, it's written in Cocoa. At some point along the way, and maybe even as like a learning exercise when I was first learning Cocoa, I converted it over. But it has, you know, it has some interesting throwback stuff in it. But, you know, eventually I switched all the QuickTime stuff over to Core Audio. And, you know, it's a... I don't know. I look back at it and I run it sometimes and I'm like, this is kind of a cool app still. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of hesitant to get rid of it. Anyway, this is kind of a diversion, but for the record, Clarion is in the App Store and it has a drawer. So it still stands in the competition for being the last app in the App Store with a drawer.
You can't retire the app until you win that, that competition.
Well, it's interesting too because, you know, I like having kind of like a diversity of apps in part because it gives me something to, to switch gears on. And the fact is I haven't worked on like Clarion or FlexTime or even that much on like FastScripts, which is something I still use all the time. I haven't worked on those apps in a long time, really. But I like the fact that they cover a different kind of like technical domain than Mars Edit, and it gives me an excuse sometimes to work on technical things that Mars Edit doesn't give me the opportunity. So mm-hmm. like, you know, anybody who gets like kind of caught into a little niche product market, they are liable to never learn about technologies that systems provide that are pertinent to other things. And I was working recently on Black Ink, and one of the things I was trying to tackle was Quick Look integration. And that's an example where, you know, there's not really an argument for Quick Look integration for Mars Edit because it's a shoebox app. It doesn't have like standalone Finder documents. Mm-hmm. But Black Ink, it's a crossword app and it has documents, and it's kind of ideal to think about like being able to quick look a crossword and see what the puzzle grid looks like and all that jazz.
Right.
Long story short on that, and I wrote a blog post about this, maybe I'll link it, but yeah, I'm that's an example where I made a mistake going to Swift with some of Black Ink because mm-hmm. you can't easily support Quick Look with Swift. What I was getting at was it can be kind of nice to have like these apps that offer a different sort of like set of challenges, because one of the things, for instance, with Clarion, it's an app that its whole purpose in life is to randomly pick music intervals and challenge you to guess what they are. If I think back about 20 years, like I remember living in San Francisco. I remember being in my apartment in San Francisco. Maybe I was on like Christmas break from working at Apple, and I was thinking, what can I do with this app to really bring it to the next level? And the thought I had at the time was, I'm going to add something that like intelligently figures out which intervals you're having trouble with and quizzes you more on those than the other ones. And I remember trying this and I was like, this is going to be easy. And I started doing it and I was like, oh, I don't know how to do this. And I think I put it on the shelf and I finally, I tried a couple things. And I was like, you know what? I'm not good at this. Put it on the shelf. Now, 20 years later, to be honest, this is like a textbook, from what I know so far, this is a textbook machine learning thing.
Right.
And Clarion would be a great example of an app that I could like crack open, add like the most rudimentary machine learning to using Apple's ML kit or whatever it's called.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of... Core ML, probably. Right? And I can't decide core or, you know, is it core intuition or is it intuition kit? I don't know. But, you know, that's kind of fun to have. I feel conflicted because it's kind of fun to have a diverse lineup of apps that you can tap into when you want to try something new or you want to explore something. But it also, of course, is a distraction from what might be the more money-making stuff.
Yeah, this is really interesting. And I'll leave a quick comment and then I want to get back to Black Ink and wrap that up. But the quick comment is that, like, when I was doing Riverfold software, first on the side and then actually mostly just on the side, to be honest, because I started working on micro.blog after I kind of transitioned out of a normal day job. But I had this idea that, yeah, I'd have several apps that were not related, and there would, you know, it'd be a good way to diversify and good way to jump between projects if my interest, you know, wasn't, you know, strong in one at any particular time. So, I mean, I had everything from like the WeTransfer, which is like a video game related management app, video, you know, and music and video streaming, to like my Clipstar, my video management app, to Tweet Library, Twitter. I mean, it was pretty random selection, and I loved that. And now I feel like I have come back or come to wanting like one thing to work on, but still have a suite of apps around that one thing. So there, if I need to focus my attention on one or the other, there's still some kind of variety, but they're all around one thing, which I'm really enjoying right now. And I think it helps me focus and just makes more sense for the micro.blog stuff I'm working on.
I think it's really good when you can connect the expertise you have from one of your apps. You can connect it and reuse it within the other apps. And, you know, I think about that actually because there's some really unusual features, for example, that I could add to my apps as a possessor of like top-notch blog publishing technologies.
Right. Blog your crossword from...
Yeah. Exactly. Well, exactly. In fact, there's these blogs out there where I sort of cringe whenever I see them because they're like these roughly taken screenshots of crosswords that people publish the answers, you know, and then they talk about it. And so I think like, and I've run into this a little bit myself, like as a, you know, in the efforts I've made to like be like a little bit just like, cause I want to, cause it's fun, but also a little bit as like Black Ink PR, I sometimes like publish a tweet or micro blog post of a part of a puzzle grid. And sometimes it's like, you can make a little joke out of it. It's like incompetent American politician. And you're like, oh, I know. But it's just kind of like, I think there's this angle of like, so much is socially connected now. And so much, you know, a lot of apps have an angle to them where it's like, well, what if I wanted to publish something about this thing I'm doing right now? And like, actually crosswords are an example, a rare example of where you do have more of a interest in maybe being social about it. So like, I can see, blog, you know, blog this or tweet this or microblog this. It's kind of like there's a share concept from a crossword app that wouldn't be there in other apps. But it's not as, you know, I always come back to like Rogue Amoeba as like the canonical example of an indie software company that has just really, you know, doubled down on audio expertise. And that's something I think we could learn more from, but finding a way to be diversified but also capitalize on your reusable code is a kind of a sweet spot.
Yeah, and I think we're finally hitting on this with micro.blog because, yeah, the thing that underlying all this stuff is blog publishing and hosting, and we could have lots of apps potentially. I mean, they're not going to have lots, but like we could have a few apps potentially that all work together with a different focus, but they were all about that. And it fits also with the story of encouraging many apps to use the micro.blog platform, you know, specifically, but also just blogging in general, just making that more approachable and having more apps. So I think that's going to work. So
do you think, Manton, maybe like someday in the future, you might like make yet another app for the micro.blog platform?
Listeners, stay tuned after the sponsor break. Wait a couple minutes. I might have something to share.
Teaser.
Let's wrap up Black Ink because you did the beta.
Real-time teaser, yeah.
And you did, you know, I assume you've gotten some feedback. Do you feel like, well, you did it. I mean, you did a Mars Edit bug fix release in the middle of this too. But like, do you feel like, hey, you got some feedback, but Black Ink 2 is pretty good. Like, should you wrap it up and ship it? Or are you going to let the beta sit for a while and then come back to it?
I'm a little bit mixed, a little bit conflicted about that because I got some good feedback. First of all, as is the case with so many things in this modern era. I mean, it's not specific to the modern era, but I think it's exacerbated by the modern era that there is just so much stuff out there vying for people's attention that it's like, and I know like not everybody's gonna be like, woohoo, a new crossword app, but like I'm a little bit let down by the lack of response even from within like the crossword aficionados.
Okay.
I mean, I got some great response from a couple people who are really, really into crosswords and really into already into Black Ink.
Right.
I think I probably sold a couple more copies. It sort of timed itself with also, you know, the, I can't remember the timeline exactly. I don't know if I had released the beta already, but they're the big like New York area, you know, national crossword competition thingy had was going on. Mm-hmm. And so I like put out a coupon code and that jazz.
That's
and
cool.
Anyway, I guess kind of similar to my Mars Edit 4 release, there is, I mean, I'm not going to lie. It's like, there's not as much response to my stuff as I wish there was.
Yeah.
And, it's one of these situations where every time this comes up, Manton, I'm careful to say I'm really grateful for the amount of exposure that my stuff gets, the amount of demand there is for my stuff, but it's not meeting the standard of it's not meeting the standard of I shouldn't have a day job. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, I do.
And that's one of those things where I don't want to be a whiner about that, but I want to be honest about the fact that something's missing and I didn't expect Black Ink to fix everything,
sure.
But you know, I expected some level of response from it that was possibly a little bit more than it got.
Mm-hmm.
And, I'm still relieved to have it out there. I'm glad that, you know, some of the people who have seen it are really impressed with the changes I've made. And it does feel good to have that work that I put into it not have been,
right,
you know, for nothing. It's still a beta, so now I feel like I still have the pressure to sort of finish it up and ship it.
Mm-hmm.
But I do have a few other things I want to do with that release, and I think similarly to how when I shipped the Mars Edit 4 beta, it kind of gave me a little breathing room. I think I'm gonna let it simmer for a little bit and just sort of maintain a kind of public beta for at least. Probably at least a few months.
Few months.
And then ship
it. Okay. Because I was going to suggest the opposite. Like if it hasn't, you know, people like it. It's a solid update. You know, especially existing customers love it. I was going to say, just ship it now because you know it's better. Nice update for everybody, and whatever you're going to work on with Black Ink over the next 3 months is not going to like make sales double or triple, right? It's going to be a good release. But, and so that to me, that would be like, just release it now. And then everybody has it.
Yeah.
I mean, I can see it both ways, but just like based on what you're saying, a little disappointed at the reaction. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, just release it and then move on and you can always update it. On the other hand, you know, maybe the timing is just bad. And if you wait 2 months and you do the release, maybe you'll get more traction and more attention.
Yeah, well,
so
and the other thing is, I mean, there's something real. I mean, there really is something to be said for just shipping it and moving on. But this is one of those situations where I had some things in mind for this release that
I see
just aren't there yet. And so it's kind of like, well, you know, I really will feel better about myself if I get those things in, and they're not, you know, they're not the hugest things in the world, but they just take time. And I don't know. We'll see how it goes. But the other thing I try to remind myself, of course, is, you know, as much as I'm disappointed in a way by the response to this release, to, you know, Mars Edit 4, to the Mars Edit 4 beta before that, I have to remind myself that, you know, the Mars Edit 4 release did get a lot better response than the beta did. And in a way that the takeaway for me from that was, a lot of people do, understandably, I would do the same thing. A lot of people sort of just gloss over betas because they don't want to invest the time in something that's not called, you know, done.
Yeah.
And unless you're like actually like really avid, you know, wanting to keep up with the last, you know, the latest and greatest, even if it's, in a buggy or incomplete state, then you don't really pay attention. Like, I was impressed when Mars Edit 4 came out, and a lot of people gave me feedback that let me know that they had not ever tried a beta. And some of the people who did that, I'm not upset about it or anything. I was just surprised that they hadn't tried the beta. And but so that's a good reminder. I mean, it's just one of the things to know about the landscape of people. And I think I think it's real that the way people cope with and process new stuff today in 2018 is fundamentally different from the way that they did it 10 years ago
mm-hmm.
or 20 years ago. And, you know, that is to say, like, there's just a ton of stuff out there that goes yeah. that goes for apps, that goes for blog posts, that goes for Twitter posts, that goes for, podcasts,
mm-hmm.
you know, like there's, thank you everybody for listening to this. We know obviously you have about 1,000 times as many choices of podcasts as you did 9 years ago when this podcast first came out. And that's just the fact. Yeah. And there's a lot of things vying for people's attention. And it's one of those things where, the ability to create and release things has increased and become more like universal, and more people than ever have access to that. But that means that, you know, the amount of stuff out there is also far greater. And it's just one of the, you know, add it to the list of challenges of making an indie software or indie anything pursuit successful is, you know, we've talked for a long time about this, Manton. It is not enough to make something good.
No.
And I mean, for one thing, whatever we make, as good as we think it is, often it's bad in some ways that we don't understand. But even when it's good, it's not enough to be good.
Right. I mean, yeah, how much attention is on what you talk about, what you blog, what you link to. I mean, it matters so much. And, you know, I sometimes put something out that I think this is great. And maybe everybody on Microdot blog who follows me also thinks it's great, but that doesn't equal like new people coming to the platform, right? And a lot of my stuff is cross-posted to Twitter, and you know, some people see that, but I reset my Twitter account, you know, from, you know, 5 years ago or whatever to now. And so I had to rebuild all my followers from scratch. I don't have a huge audience on Twitter either. And so maybe like one person likes it and then that's the day.
Right.
And I was reminded of this yesterday, actually. Cult of Mac wrote a really long, nice article about, so you want to move away from Twitter and Facebook, what are your options? And it was basically all about Microdot blog. And
ooh, nice.
So we've been seeing a steady stream of new people coming in, and fantastic. You know, I love when people write about Microdot blog. And I noticed on Twitter, you know, they have 700,000 followers. I mean, that's,
wow.
Way, the reach of that is way more than the best blog post that I've ever written, right? So that matters. Like, and it, sometimes it's just luck whether the person with the right, you know, audience, you know, writes about your stuff. And I don't know what that is for Black Ink. You know, it didn't happen for the beta, it sounds like, but maybe it'll happen for the release. There's some crossword fan out there somewhere that has a big audience. It's just, it's impossible to predict.
Yep.
It's very difficult to build toward that, except very slowly. And that's all we can do, really. It's like slowly make our stuff better, try to build an audience, and try to get the word out without being annoying so that, you know, maybe someone that has a big audience will pick it up and point people that way.
It's such a roller coaster ride, because as much as I'm sort of sounding down right now and like, oh, you know, what's the, I know there's a little bit of my attitude right now that's kind of like, what's the point? Like, make nice things and nobody's going to buy them, and I might as well get a real job. And then like, you know, like I'm on App Figures. I have my like app sales stats coming in, and then it's gotten a little confusing because ever since I stopped just selling through my own site, like I used to have my own stats thing,
right.
And then the App Store came out, and now I have like this mix, and I never really correlated them. And so I kind of have like a less impressive looking number depending on what I'm looking at all the time,
yeah.
Because it's like, it's only part.
Yeah.
But every once in a while, you know, so every once in a while I have like a really depressing, like App Figures, like $0 sale day. And I'll just be like, oh, crying out loud, like, what am I doing? And then have a day like it was, you know, 2 days ago, I got one of these days where I was just like, what? Is there a bug in app figures? Like, I've sold like 3 times as many apps in 1 day as I have like in years.
Nice.
And then I was like, what's going on here? And this is just one of these funny things. Like, I think I've talked about this before too, man. I don't know. I'm for some reason, I'm big in Japan. And every once in a while, I sell like 10 copies of Barzedit in a day in Japan. And I'm like, oh, thank you, Japan. One of these days, I should reward you with a localized version of the app.
Yeah, just imagine what the sales would be.
But that's one of those days, just to say, like, I'm not saying that to brag about my sales in Japan, but to say that's an example of that kind of like indie dream, like, well, if this could happen on one day in Japan, it could happen on any day, you know, somewhere else. It could happen anywhere. Just to say, like, when you get those little things where you get like a 3x sales day, it's fun to be in the place in your indie software development life where a 1x day is kind of disappointing, and a 3x day is like, everything's all right. And then like to know that if you could just get those 3x days to happen more consistently, then everything would quote unquote be all right. And I think it's that like sort of, it's like that within reach feeling that makes it sort of so frustrating and so gratifying. It's like, I have tasted success, you know, and then it's been yanked from my hands. But it's kind of, you know, it's fun to get a taste for it. And, you know, that I can step back and say, there's all these things I'm not doing quite as well as I could be. And if I were doing them just a little bit better, it stands to reason. Okay. You know, the next time Cult of Mac or whoever writes about this, it's going to be that much better. But you kind of just have to keep going. I think the takeaway here is continues to be a kind of large component of blind faith going forward. And it's not blind faith, like just hope for the best. It's like you have to try to do things that make the best come out. But it's really hard to gauge when the results of those actions are actually going to show up. Like you can't really measure the your excitement about this Cult of Mac coverage. Well, it only exists because of all the work you put into it for the past 3+ years going into it. And you didn't know 2.5 years ago that this one thing you were doing was going to culminate in this coverage this week in 2018 and that it was going to take that long to maybe get somebody with 700,000 followers on Twitter to write about it. And likewise, you don't know, you know, knock on wood, you don't know that what you're working on now is hopefully going to culminate in like, you know, the Wall Street Journal tech column about it coming down the road.
We can hope. Yep. All right, this week we're happy to have Linode sponsoring the podcast again. If you need a Linux box to host a website, a private Git repository, or maybe to serve as the backend for your iOS app, consider Linode Cloud Hosting. With Linode, you get a server running in under a minute. They've been doing infrastructure as a service since 2003, and their plans start at the 1 gigabyte level for only $5 a month. Linode's 10 global data centers are equipped with industry-leading data center-grade SSDs, and their plans range from that low $5 a month plan up to higher memory plans starting at 16 gigabytes. All of this comes with the full control you expect with a VM, supporting Docker containers, encrypted disks, VPNs, etc. 24/7 friendly support, even on holidays. So you can save $20 if you use the promo code CoreInt2018. Just go to Linode.com/CoreInt. Thanks so much to Linode for sponsoring the show.
Manton, you know, we love talking on this show about independent, entrepreneurial pursuits, creative pursuits, etc. And one thing I love about having a Linode account and having Linode servers at my fingertips is it's so easy for me to not only imagine, but then create and deploy like whatever domain, whatever site I want. You know, I hear people talking about, oh, What's your favorite way to host WordPress? Is this service okay? And it's like, you know, I'm technically savvy enough. Linode makes it easy enough. I just drop a WordPress instance on one of my Linodes. Make a new Linode if I want it to be independent. If I register a domain name, because I have like some like, you know, thing I want to do. I recently registered a domain name because I have this ambition in my town. I want to make a web page specifically to promote adding more drinking fountains in my town. It's like a really kind of just random little small town thing to want to do. But the fact that I have a Linode waiting for me, a Linode account, and if I want to make my own server for this thing even, I can do it for $5 a month. I just register the domain, create a new instance on Linode, and I'm in business. It's a really great resource, especially for folks who like to be in control of all of these things. You want to be able to control exactly what software is running on your server. You don't want some shared hosting service saying you can or can't do this or that. You don't want them interfering with what kind of, you know, network connections you can make or what can connect to you. You want to be able to control everything. You want it to be high performance. You want it to be excellent, low cost. As I said, starting at just $5 a month. If you use that promo code, CoreInt2018, it's like getting 4 months for free at the $5 a month plan. So if you're like me, you have ambitions, entrepreneurial, local, whatever, community-minded, you just want to do something funny, you want to make a joke on the web, you know, go make a website and put it on Linode. Like I said, affordable and you're in full control. Go to linode.com/coreint. Thanks for sponsoring the show.
So Daniel, I mentioned earlier in the show wanting kind of a suite of apps around micro.blog. Of course, we have the micro.blog platform and website. Of course, we have the Mac app, which is kind of what I use day to day. I think a lot of people use that. We have the iPhone app, and we have an app that we launched, I guess, a month or two now, Sunlit, which is all about photos. And Sunlit was kind of the first experiment of like, could we make another app that was about like one feature and do way more than we could if it was just like a built-in feature inside the micro.blog app. And I think it's worked out great. I think people really like the app. I think there's a lot of potential for it still. But there's other stuff we want to do. And as we are recording, we have not announced this yet, but when the show goes live, I think it will be out. And that is, well, let me rewind a second.
Wait for it, folks. Oh, the suspense is killing us. Oh, well, let's just take another break.
So like a few weeks ago, or no, a little over a month ago, we launched this new podcast for micro.blog called Micro Monday. And Micro Monday for the last few months has been kind of like, recommend someone on micro.blog to follow, kind of like Follow Friday. And you know, you just post like, oh, you should follow so-and-so and link to their micro.blog account. And it's a great way to discover new people on the platform. A lot of people come to micro.blog and they can't just bring all their Twitter followers with them because there's no feature to do that. And also because like, you know, half their Twitter followers maybe aren't on micro.blog yet. So like they need to find new people to get the most out of the platform. So Micro Monday is really great. And we started a podcast where it's like a short podcast, maybe 5-10 minutes every week, where we interview like one micro.blog user. And it's really fun. I think people really like it. You get to know, you know, one person on micro.blog, like what's their background, like what do they blog about? Simple stuff, but it's neat. Anyway, long story short, we have been using that podcast to test probably the biggest new feature that we've added to micro.blog, which is podcast hosting. So like that podcast is hosted on micro.blog, and we want to roll that out to everybody because I think short podcasts are really fun. They're easy to edit. You can just do them by yourself. And I've been doing this for a while with my timetable microcast, and I think more people should be able to do that. So we're rolling out a new plan for this. I'm running out of breath, like saying everything all at once, but we are also launching, and this gets back to where I started with a suite of apps, a new iPhone app that's all about recording, editing, and publishing microcasts to micro.blog. And Daniel, I'm really excited about this. I think it's really cool.
So did you say the name of it?
I did not.
Is it announced yet?
I didn't say the
name. Do you want to?
It's going to be either
the announcement that turns out, unfortunately, to be a sneak preview for Core Intuition listeners because you haven't actually released, or you need to announce it because, I mean, You got to just come clean.
So the iPhone app is called Wavelength. Wavelength for Microdot Blog. And
nice.
Man, we spent so much time trying to come up with a name. I really like the name. There's a couple other people using that name for other projects, so I'm hoping it won't be much of a conflict. But yeah, Wavelength for Microdot Blog. And yeah, you can record directly in the app. You can kind of like, you know, split clips and drag things around to do like simple editing of your podcast. Converts to MP3. It publishes it to Microdot Blog. You can do everything in one app. So there's been some experiments with things like this, but they feel like they're more like, they're not about blogging and about the web. They're about like, how can we, you know, capitalize on, you know, podcasting being popular. And so this is all about just extending what a blog can do. And if you want to start a short podcast, why not have that at your own domain name, right? Then you can move it if you need to. You can own all the audio files and all the content. And so I think it's just a really natural fit for Microdot Blog. And I hope a bunch of new people will find out about Microdot Blog because of this. And also I hope, you know, there'll be a bunch of new podcasts. You know, just like I think there's way more blogs now because of all the people on Microdot Blog. I hope that people that have been wanting to try a podcast, but it's like way too complicated. And if you Google like how to start a podcast, it's like, forget it. You know, it's like people give up. You know, you need this microphone, you need this fancy software, like all the things that we do for Core Intuition. But if you just wanted to start something simple and record for 5 minutes and post it every couple of days or every week, it should be easier.
Now, this is obviously a great example, like you said, of building on the sort of Microdot Blog ecosystem. But correct me if I'm wrong, Manton, this has the same approach as your other Microdot Blog apps in that it works really well with Microdot Blog, but strictly speaking, let me separate this into two thoughts.
Sure.
First of all, you can use this to publish to any WordPress blog. Is that right?
That's not right.
Not right. Oh,
so okay. Yeah, I knew that's where you were going. And okay. I'm really
this
curious.
Is a good caveat. Yeah.
I'm really curious to hear what people think about that question when they see what we've done. So yeah. 1.0 of the app can only publish to Microdot Blog.
Okay.
And we did that for two reasons. Well, many reasons really, but the two big ones are we can just simpler. We can just get it done and ship it and people can use it. And, you know, we added, you know, WordPress support and Micropub support and, you know, whatever crazy, you know, old XML RPC server you have that you can throw at
right.
the app. We added that to Microdot Blog. I think that's really important. And we added that to Sunlit. And I think that's really important. But podcasts, I think, are a little different because if you publish an audio file to WordPress, you don't have a podcast. Like, you have an audio file there, but like, that's not a podcast, right? And so I was concerned about just letting that happen, and then people think they have a podcast, and then they've got to do all this extra work on WordPress to figure out how to make it a podcast. And so with Microdot Blog, we do everything for you. So like when you upload an audio file to Microdot Blog, it creates the podcast feed. It has all the iTunes tags in it. Like, it does everything for you. Like, you don't have to do anything. It uses your profile picture, you know, for the artwork by default. You know, the name of your website is the podcast. You know, it does everything. And so I think that's the best place to start. And then based on feedback, you know, we can obviously expand it to support other platforms.
Right.
But I think it makes sense to start it with just Microdot Blog and then see what people think.
Yeah, that makes sense. And especially since you're doing this value add, which is the generation of all the metadata, the feed, the special feed for the podcast. It's like, you know, there's whole apps out there that do this in a more general way, but you got to go through the whole process of you know, recording and then like cutting the audio, mixing the audio, running effects on the audio, uploading the audio, then making a separate blog post that refers to the audio as an enclosure. And this is all the stuff that I think I'm not speaking inaccurately now. You do with Wavelength. And what I like about this is, first of all, it sounds like a great product. Like it makes me immediately think like, ooh, I wonder if there's something I should be doing as a microcast.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like the same as the whole like, what's Twitter's thing with the, it's with video, but it's, you know, a Periscope or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like that, but, you know, it fits more naturally into the podcast community, right? There's people expect to be able to go to iTunes and whatever podcast app and search for a podcast. And what you're offering with Wavelength lets people do that in a way that's got, I mean, the way you're describing it, I haven't used it yet. I haven't had a sneak peek at it, but the way that you're describing it, it sounds like it's going to be easy to market in a sense, because you can honestly say, this is the easiest way to publish short podcasts, you know, like, or any podcast, mm-hmm. but it has to be short,
yeah,
right?
there are limits on the length, yeah. But yeah.
But like, if I was going to say today, you know, like it would, I did this thing intermittently with my friend Samuel Goodwin. He was promoting it mostly on Twitter, this thing he did called Just Play, where he was encouraging people to play music and publish it every day for 30 days. And I didn't do it. I only did it a few times, just intermittently. But that kind of idea for an audio podcast, you know, I could imagine things like if I were an aspiring comic, have like one joke a day,
right?
Or something.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Cool. Like things, these little ideas, or like if you're a singer, you know, sing a song every day. And the idea of going from having that idea to making it a podcast, we know how this goes, man. Yeah. You and I have each made our own podcasts. We've made them together as Core Intuition. We've made them independently, and it's easier than it's ever been. But it's still a whole lot of junk that you don't want to have to figure out,
right?
And When you first told me about this idea, I had the immediate reaction was, oh, this is finally a feature of Micro.blog that people who are confused about like how Micro.blog differs from Twitter or another social network, this is a feature of Micro.blog that people can say, oh, I can't do that with Twitter, mm-hmm. you know?
Right.
Oh, I can't do that with my WordPress blog out of the box. I can't do that with Facebook. I couldn't even do that with app.net.
Yeah. And, you know, and I think that it gets to, you're totally right. And I hadn't really even thought about it like concretely that way until you mentioned it, but I think it's a great selling point and a great answer to like, well, what can I do that's different? And I think we can do this because of the philosophy of Micro.blog, which is to embrace the open web, right? Like Twitter can't even do this because like they don't want you to be able to listen to a Twitter feed in Overcast. Like goes against their entire business model. And so I don't think Twitter or Facebook will ever have something like this. Just doesn't make sense for their business, but it's exactly what we want, right? I want someone to be able to create a podcast as easy as possible and have all their friends subscribe in Overcast and Castro and whatever other app that they want, right? That's what the web is about. And like the compatibility between apps is super important. And so, yeah, I think that's kind of a unique, just it goes along with what we want to do with Micro.blog.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's just, I think it's fair to say that you have a marketing challenge in the fact that so much about Micro.blog can be compared feature for feature with Twitter. And it's a marketing challenge because although that makes it easy for people to understand some of the basic metaphors of the service, it makes it really easy also for people to say, well, why should I bother? I already have all that on Twitter, mm-hmm. you know, and like for people who aren't like fired up about the open web aspect of it or the, you know, the there are some specific features to Micro.blog that are appealing to people. But for, I think it's fair to say, the vast majority of existing Twitter users, it's an uphill battle for you to explain why they should switch.
Right.
Or why they should use both. And I just love, from a business point of view, I think that you can have like the baseline functionality that you have and be proud of that and let people discover what's better about Micro.blog in those areas on their own time and, you know, in their own ways. But having these unique selling features as the things that get people in the door, I think, is important. You know, we talked mm-hmm. a few weeks ago about the whole dirt road at the outskirts of town.
And the cheese and the hamburger.
this is a sort of a way of like putting a neon sign up that's like, easy podcasts here. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people come in for the easy podcasts and maybe they stay for the you know, community.
Right.
And maybe they stay for the openness of their owning their own micro post, you know, archive, whatever, you know, whatever the things are that distinguish micro.blog from closed services. You're going to do better, I think, if you can continue to add, oh, this is something that's just not possible on Twitter. And that's going to bring some people in.
I hope so. I like your neon sign, you know, analogy. Because, yeah, it's like, yeah, we're still way out in the country, but, like, it's worth the trek. Like, we've got something that you should check out. It's worth coming out here.
Yeah. Well, like, now you're downtown at the cool, like, Austin downtown bars. What is it, 3rd Street? Is that what you call it?
6th Street.
6th Street. You're at a 6th Street bar, and someone's like, hey, have you been out to micro.blog? It's like 30 miles out of town on a dirt road, and you have to rent a tricycle. And somebody's like, oh, that sounds cool. That sounds like a hipster place. And then somebody else is like, why the heck would I go there? And they're like, well, man, they've got microcasts. Can't get microcasts inside the city limits.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of, you know, the point of doing this feature is to get more attention, right? That's what we talked about the first half of the show. You know, I hope that even if people don't want to use the podcasting support and create their own microcast, I mean, maybe they play around with them. You can download the app and just play with it for free and it doesn't hurt anything. Maybe if they don't stick with it, they still are more aware about micro.blog and they maybe see kind of vision for what the platform could become over time. And that helps. And then the other aspect to this is just expanding what we can offer. So the podcasting is not going to be free built in for everybody, right? It's going to be a paid plan because we've got to host all these audio files. Like, we're not putting ads on your podcast. Like, there's no other business model. Like, that's the model, is to, you pay what we think is a fair price for hosting. And so not everybody's going to want to do that. The plan is to charge $10 a month instead of $5 a month if you want all the blog features and all the podcasting stuff. And I think it's a fair price. I think it's less than a lot of podcasts, you know, oriented hosts. But, you know, we'll see. We'll see what the feedback of that is. But that's a really long-term for the business. It's a really important thing for micro.blog to be able to actually be a business, you know, actually pay for all the things that we want to do. And so at some point we have to kind of expand like the things that we can offer people. And I'm hoping this is kind of a step in the right direction for that.
Yeah. Well, it seems really exciting. I hope that we haven't just given everybody an incredible teaser for something that will not actually be out for several months.
I think it'll be out.
It'll be out.
So just to wrap this up, 1.0 of Wavelength was approved by Apple yesterday.
Okay, and that's good.
There's some glitches. Like, there's some things, like, I submitted to 1.0 because you never know with a 1.0. Like, is Apple going to approve it? Like, you know, what's going to happen? And in fact, they rejected the first version because even though it's an iPhone-only app, they ran it on an iPad and it crashed at some point in recording. And I don't think it was related to the iPad, but the fact that they tested on the iPad, I found really bizarre. Like, aren't they... Isn't there a time limited? Like, why are they testing an iPhone-only app on an iPad Air 2? That just seems really bizarre to me. But so we fixed that, submitted it. They approved 1.0, but we've held it and plan on seeing if they will approve the bug fix update before we announce everything. So worst case, like, we could ship 1.0, but I'd much rather ship 1.0.1 because it fixes a number of things. And obviously, I want people's experience to be the best you know, when they first use the app.
Well, that sounds exciting. It's going to be really interesting to, I mean, I'm already thinking, like I said, like, I think the idea is probably everyone listening to this, you can think of ideas like the joke a day idea, singing something, whatever, just like stuff like you've done. How am I blanking on it? On your, what's your microcast?
Timetable.
Again, timetable, right? Timetable. It takes the pressure off a little bit to just have like this, like, independent, just talk for a few minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Give people an update. It's almost like a audio diary as well.
Yep, exactly.
And that's just kind of a cool idea. So I hope that it gets some nice uptake and it'll be one of those things that is also another businessy angle of this is anybody who does pick it up is going to be setting an example for people. They're going to be like, oh, how did you do your podcast? And they'll be like, oh, I used micro.blog. And so there could be a little bit of a promotional aspect there, I think.
Okay, our second sponsor this week is Udacity. Ready to develop iOS apps, but not sure how or where to start? Udacity's on-demand content fits your schedule and is the most flexible and efficient way for you to master the skills you need to become an iOS developer, whether your goals are to publish an indie app or land your dream job. Udacity's iOS Developer Nano Degree program is ideal for students of all levels. By the end of the program, you'll be ready to publish your own app on the App Store, and you'll have a portfolio of apps that you can show to potential employers. Just for our listeners and for a limited time only, Udacity is offering a 20% discount on a subscription to the iOS Developer Nano Degree program. That's $40 off per month for the entire program. And there's a one-week free trial, so you can check out the program risk-free. To sign up, go to udacity.com/iOS and enter the coupon code CoreInt, all lowercase, on the payment page. Thanks to Udacity for sponsoring the show.
Manton, you know, we have a lot of iOS developers, a lot of Mac developers listening to this show. And I know from feedback over the years, we also have a lot of folks who are tech enthusiasts, product managers, just general managers, writers, whatever. You got a lot of people, though, who have this vague interest in maybe learning to be an iOS developer. So I really can't emphasize how great an opportunity this is with Udacity to finally follow up on that ambition. Like Manton said, they have a one-week free trial. You get a 20% discount if you use this CoreInt coupon code. You've been thinking about this. I'm talking to you now. You're listening to me. I know you're not a programmer. You don't do iOS. You have the opportunity to learn. Go to udacity.com/iOS. Use that coupon code CoreInt. And today is going to be the day that you finally get started on this ambition to become an iOS developer. Whether that's because you want to be able to make your own app, you want to be able to scratch your own itch, create an app that you've always wanted, whether it's because you want to change your career, you want to get started programming for iOS. This is a great way to do it. And as much as I'm emphasizing the fact that they have stuff for beginners, they also go so deep. It's really a great resource for people who already do have some experiences as well. So you owe it to yourself. Give yourself some education. Give yourself a leg up in this industry. Go to udacity.com/iOS. CoreInt coupon code will get you 20% off on your subscription. Thanks so much to Udacity for sponsoring the show. So Manton, I was kind of griping a little earlier today on our show about, you know, lackluster response to a release and da 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 da. And, you know, I have mixed feelings. I feel so grateful for having as much success as I have. But then it's like you work so hard, nonstop. You know, we don't have weekends, really. We don't have nights, really. We don't have vacations, really. It's a glamorous life and a very unglamorous life, this, like, concerted pursuit of indie success. And sometimes I feel like I'm just like emotionally at a place where I have zero expletives to give, you know, and I'm just like, come on, throw me a bone here. And I had one of these incidents last week, April 6th. I have some good/bad habits of like checking up on the Mac App Store and seeing like where Mars Edit stands in the features and in the you know, they have these cool little featured sections. And for years I was lucky that I was in the apps for writers section.
Yeah.
And I was just like, that's so cool. Like, I'm so grateful that Apple put me in there. And you know, when Apple first debuted the Mac App Store, like what, 8 years ago or something, 7 years maybe, they featured Mars Edit prominently on the front page. And I was like, thank you, Apple. This is great. And then when I came out with Mars Edit 4, I don't know, we talked about this before, I still think something fishy is going on because like I don't show up in the ratings in general as much as I think I should. But like salt in the wound was as a consequence of taking Mars Edit 3 off of the App Store and creating a new SKU for Mars Edit 4, like I fell out of all those features. And it just like really hit home. I've been waiting patiently. It's been 5 months since I released Mars Edit 4. And I thought, well, maybe they just, you know, editorial's slow. They'll revise this one of these days. They'll realize that like the section of the Apps for Writers feature called Journaling and Blogging has only one blog app in it, and it's not Mars Edit.
Right.
And they'll go, oh, whoops. And, you know, I'm not just like screaming into a vacuum here. I did the quote unquote right thing. I sent the submission forms, like requesting features. And I said specifically, like, even if you don't feature me as like a featured app, would you please consider returning me to the journaling and blogging section of the Apps for Writers? Because it's just like, it's not just a purely selfish thing. It's just like, as a user, I would want to know, like, I think it's actually in Apple's interests if they're going to have a section that highlights the apps from their platform that serve the blogging needs of customers.
Yeah.
It's a disservice to them. You know, it's kind of a nice place to be after all these years to like have made an app and to be confident enough in it to be able to say with some certainty, like, if you are a Mac user and you want software for your Mac to do blogging, it might not necessarily be the case that Mars Edit is the app for you, but it's definitely the case that you should evaluate it. You right. know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's in there. And by many measures, it is the clear leader for the platform. In part by just being like the one
last standing.
Full, the most full featured, let's say.
Oh, okay. That works too.
Yeah, it's just, but yeah, last standing in a lot of ways. But like, you know, anybody who wants Mac blogging software, they're going to be glad at least that they had the opportunity to see that Mars Edit exists.
Yeah.
So I sort of went on a little rant. I did it on micro.blog and on Twitter.
Thank you.
And I just started it off saying, you know, I posted a screenshot of that section missing Mars Edit, and then I sort of went more emotional about it. And I've talked about how it's frustrating that somebody who went to the Mac App Store looking for blogging software wouldn't find Mars Edit if they just like went into the feature section. I finally like culminated in like a post that was just like a little snarky. I put like a list of checklist marks in the post, and it says, great app? Check. Mac exclusive? Check. Rabid fan base? Check. 5-star average? Check. Indie success story? Check. And these are all the things that I envision Apple wanting from its developers that it chooses to feature. And so I said, you know, frankly, Apple should be helping me and other developers like me way more than they are.
Mm-hmm.
And this is like not news to any developers, but it's like, come on, Apple. Like, this is an example where I'm doing everything right. And I don't expect like Apple features to solve all of my marketing problems. I don't expect like me to just write the code and make the app and ship it, and then Apple takes care of the rest. I just don't like it when I feel like I'm pressing up against the resistance of Apple, like actively preventing me from succeeding on their platform. And that's sort of how it felt.
This is a big job of the App Store, too. It's like, that's why the App Store exists, is to feature things. Make downloads and installs and buying easier, and to feature things. Have a curated selection of the best apps or things that are interesting you should check out. Like, yeah, they've completely dropped the ball if they don't include one of the top couple, if not the top, blogging app in their category of featured blogging and writing. I mean, it makes no sense. It's an obvious oversight just because you changed, you know, to a new major version. And unfortunately, I feel like that, you know, the email you sent to, you used to send like an email to promotion. Now I think it's a form. Like, they probably get so many of those every day. Like, feature my app, feature my app. It's the best. Please, please, please. I mean, honestly, they probably ignore or skim most of those. So, I mean, I'm not surprised that they missed yours, or it wasn't acted on. But I mean, this is something like someone should be on top of, like reviewing these featured sections every once in a while. And I feel like on the iOS App Store, they are. Like, the iOS App Store, like in terms of the curation and the featured sections, I think has improved significantly, you know, since iOS 11. You know, specifically, but just in general. And the Mac App Store has not seen that same attention. And, you know, yes, the same old tired story. We always talk about the Mac App Store being ignored, but it's true.
I mean, it is true. It's unfortunate. And I'm trying to be careful when I make these rants. I try to be careful because I know that I have more reach than some developers do. And I don't like, I've talked about this before too, Manton. I don't like winning the race with an advantage, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, I want to be on an even, you know, an even setting with all the other developers, which means I want to be successful, but not at the expense of any other developer or because any other developer has less of an advantage than I do. Yeah. So when I make these kinds of rants, I usually try to phrase them as like, you know, that's why I said in my rant, like, frankly, I and other developers like me deserve better than this. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I have to sort of take the good with the bad because it turns out there's a happy ending to this story for me, which is I was gratified. First of all, I had several people just respond with like, what the hell? Like, this is messed up. And that's just gratifying from like a, you know, I need to vent point of view, and to have other people say, yes, this is messed up is nice. I had some folks who graciously wrote, you know, filed bug reporter bugs with Apple that just said like, hey, I don't know, we'll see what happens. Yeah, it's like
worth a try.
They're like, I don't even know if, you know, there is an App Store editorial bug category. but then I had, in addition to that, I had one friend from inside Apple filed a bug internally, which I was gratified by. Mm-hmm. That was nice of them. And finally, I had, and this is again because of my privilege and because of my audience, because of my connections to a wide variety of people, I had another third-party developer DM'd me on Twitter to tell me that he had somebody from the App Store who had DM'd him, I guess because they saw that he and I are connected on Twitter, saying they wished that they could get in touch with me. I was like, okay, well, I don't know. You probably have my email somewhere at Apple. But anyway, I got connected with them on Twitter, and they were apologetic. And within about an hour, amazingly,
wow,
the app was back in the feature section.
Wow, that's actually really fast, considering.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'll do an app release, and it's like all day till the app shows up. So I feel a little bit about ranting about the Mac App Store now because it does have a happy ending. And once the right people were notified that, you know, they acted quickly. But the fact that you it's not like you had to pull some strings exactly, but the fact that you had to complain loudly and get the attention of specific people that already know you is kind of annoying.
And I just want to make it super clear that I have to acknowledge that this is not an outcome that an average developer on the platform can expect.
Right.
You know, and even if they did happen to have, you know, an app that could be reasonably considered like a canonical example of the app category, it just so happens I've spent a lot of the past 10 years being socially active online. And there are other developers who haven't done that, or they're newer to the platform, and they may still have like what is a canonical app that should be in featured in a category or whatever. You know, if something, even if it's just like something like it was featured, but they changed the SKU, and so therefore they're not featured anymore, that's a big bummer. And if they don't have a way of fixing that, that is a problem. So it is a happy ending for me. And, you know, I also say like it's not like the biggest thing in the world to be featured in this little category. Mm-hmm. It's just
the
something
injustice
that
of not being
it just
included.
Feels wrong. Yeah, and I'm sure it helps a little bit in my sales. I'm sure my 5 months of sales, you know, especially in the wake of a major update, would have been better if I had the same place in the feature that I'd had for 10 years.
Yeah,
or whatever, 8 years prior to that. 7 years? I don't know. but anyway, just to say, I guess I feel also kind of conflicted. Like, I don't like it when I rant like that in a way. It feels good. It lets off steam. I get some nice feedback from people. But I also feel kind of like a big public whiner. But then it has sometimes a positive outcome.
Right.
And, you know, I don't know. It may have more positive outcomes than I know. It may be that the person who ended up helping me took this situation to heart and is like filed a bug internally to say like, hey, how do we prevent this from happening? It may be that no, that didn't happen and things are just going to go on being the way they are. But I guess it's just to say, hey, sometimes being a public whiner does have positive consequences. And I guess I'm glad I did it. It's nice to see my beautiful Mars Edit new icon designed by Brad Ellis shining in the featured section of this little apps for writers category.
Well, and you know, the important thing is to, when you do rant about something, to do it respectfully, because I think, you know, and kind of fairly, because like there are ways you could have ranted about this that would have been too negative. You know, like just, you know, you see, especially, I mean, Twitter, you see this all the time on Twitter, just like constant complaining or
right.
mocking or, I don't need to explain. I mean, everybody's seen this kind of behavior.
No.
And
yeah.
So if you do complain, be patient. Don't complain right away. I mean, you spent months before you complained. And then be mm-hmm. respectful enough where it feels like you're just trying to get to the bottom of things and not just being overly negative. But sometimes, yes, sometimes it feels like you do have to complain a little bit. And I'm sure our customers sometimes feel that way. I mean, sometimes they don't get my attention maybe if they're too nice and they have to make their support email a little bit more strongly worded. And of course, if they, you know, the same thing, if they go too far being negative, that's just, doesn't make me want to help them. And so that balance right in the middle of like, no, this is really important. I am complaining, but I'm not being like so negative that I think it's unfair.
Well, I think it's an important distinction to avoid ascribing malice that you don't understand, that you're not, especially if you're not sure of it, maybe even if you are sure of it, it's probably politically wise to consider how much you know, would ascribe it to the person as far as like a public complaint, because ascribing malice, like if I were to say, let's just pick it. I don't want this to even be on the record as about a specific app store. So let's just say like, you know, the Timex Sinclair app store doesn't want to approve my app because they are against, you know, whatever, they're against Boston and they want Boston children to starve, you know, like, that would be, it sounds a little bit crazy for one thing, but it puts the person that you're criticizing in such a position of defense that they don't really have an elegant way to come out of that.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
it's not like, oh, no, we don't want your children to starve. So we did put you in the feature section. Right. It's like, you got to give people an out that makes like sense.
Cause the truth is, I mean, most people are trying to do the right thing and like stuff falls through the cracks. They miss something, they miss an email, they miss a request, they're overwhelmed and there's not a staff that actually is doing anything with the Mac App Store features section on a daily basis. I mean, there's many reasons that they could drop the ball, and it's not because they hate the world or they're trying to do the wrong thing. Right. Like, they're trying to do the right thing. It's just mistakes happen.
Yep. And you know, you and I know that more than some people, that it actually is hard to do something complex and public and have it escape, you know, have it be free from all the things that you could possibly scrutinize it for.
Yeah.
It's impossible, in fact. So things will be wrong. And the question is, how do you respond to people who scrutinize your product? And how do you respond in a way that is sort of, you know, proportional to the severity of the thing that's wrong. You know, when somebody emails me and says, Mars Edit it makes me like click two buttons when I would really like to click one button. And I'm like, okay, that's good feedback. I'm not going to like drop everything and go fix that today,
right.
You know? But if somebody says, like speaking of my Mars Edit fix, I'll just wrap this up real quick. But my Mars Edit fix this week was a surprise update that I didn't plan on shipping, that I shipped in the course of about 12 hours after I learned that images uploaded to Blogger and embedded into posts were being embedded wrong so that they showed as broken images. And if somebody sent an email to me about that, and I was like, yeah, that's easy enough to fix. Just go in and edit the HTML and fix the URL. And then I'd be like, that would be a disproportionate response mm-hmm. to the severity of the problem. Mm-hmm. So people do have to, you know, people make mistakes and people have problems, and everybody's products out there, from the App Store to the, you know, to hardware devices, iPhones, Macs, all the way down to the littlest utilities, open source things even, they all have problems. But, you know, I think there is sort of an expectation. You respond, when you criticize those problems, you do it respectfully, and you expect people to respond proportionally to how severe the problem is. And I'm glad that Apple, when they responded to this, you know, not as a company, but as an individual, somebody at Apple responded to this, because I think they got it. They saw that it was, it didn't fulfill the spirit of what the Mac App Store is trying to be.
Right. And it was probably an easy fix. Like, once someone, yeah. I mean, it was, like you said, they fixed it quick, and I can't imagine that it was difficult. They didn't need to, like, pull up a system administrator to, like, run SQL commands or something. I mean, like, they probably clicked a couple buttons and, like, you were featured again.
Right.
So,
yeah.
Easy fix. Glad they got it. And we should wrap up now before we get hate mail that our podcast is way too long. But thanks for listening, everybody. It was really fun to talk about the new stuff. We don't always have brand new products released in one show from both of us. So it's enjoyable. Yeah. It's good.
It's a nice shift from 6 months ago when we were just perpetually never shipping anything.
Right, exactly. All right. Thanks, everybody. We'll talk to you next week, Daniel.
Yep. See you then.